This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Thanks so much for joining us for The Hump Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Middle show of the work week. We always get a little bit goofy. Sometimes I get a little bit spicy. We always allow you to ask Amy anything. And so we're looking for your questions on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And we're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away $2.5 million prizes during Super Bowl 55. Woo! Those can be used to buy your dream home. See rules and enter for free today at rocketmortgagesweepstakes.com. So we're looking for your questions for Ask Amy, and I'd love to know your interest right now in the NBA and the NHL. They're in season, but different, right? It's weird, a little bit jarring to have the NHL dropping its puck on January 13 with a 56-game season and realignment into four regional divisions. The NBA is really going through the thick of protocols and COVID interruptions. And so they're having a hard time finding any flow, but the league is committed to moving forward, hoping that it gets better at some point before they hit the postseason. Of course, the NFL is done with its regular season into the playoffs. Only 7 football games left in this season. Now that the college championship is behind us and supersized wildcard weekend is done, we've got the 4 divisional games, the 2 conference championship games, and then the Super Bowl, and that is it. And along with Super Bowl week, we always get the announcement of the upcoming inductees, those who've been selected to make the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's always a privilege to be on Radio Row and see the yellow jackets walking around and to know a new class is being welcomed. It was different last year, of course, no induction ceremony in Canton. And so at some point they hope to have a supersized ceremony at the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but they will include up to 5 new members. And the finalists were just unveiled last week, and they include Clay Matthews Jr., who's a longtime linebacker in the NFL, spent 19 seasons in the league, 16 of those with the Cleveland Browns. He played 278 games. He has more than 1,500 tackles, 83.5 sacks, though some of those sacks that he had before they started to count sacks as a stat, those are lost forever. 16 career interceptions, 27 forced fumbles, 14 fumble recoveries, and he is now a finalist for the first time to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. There is another Clay Matthews. There's also a Bruce Matthews, his brother, who's a Hall of Famer. His son played in the NFL, Clay Matthews III. In fact, he's one of 8 family members to compete at the NFL level. And just a couple hours ago, I had a chance to catch up with him, and it was really cool to be able to pick his brain and to hear his stories. And of course, the first thing I had to ask Clay is how much he enjoyed his former franchise, the Browns, winning a playoff game for the first time since he was in the league back in the 90s.
You know, it was fantastic. The thing that stood out to me is I've had a couple boys that have played in the NFL, so I've been preoccupied with the Browns and really haven't been able to follow them. Nor did when I stopped playing, I was 40 years old, and so That the point I'm making is that's the first time I wanted to go back and play again for the Browns. So it was just an amazing game, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
It's a long time coming, yet the fans have remained so steadfast. What's special about Cleveland Browns fans?
I was drafted there back in 1978, and, you know, the world seemed a lot smaller back then, and I didn't know that much about Cleveland, and went back there, and just wherever I went around town, I would run into folks, you know, and they would the thing is, they're very informed, and they were, you know, they weren't offensive, but they had some good opinions. So I had some good conversations at the gas station and the 7-Eleven and places like that, and really enjoyed them. That's, you know, as I think back, those were the highlights, were some of the conversations I had in the most out of the way place.
You recently had the opportunity to be inducted into their Ring of Honor. What was that experience like to go back to Cleveland and to do it in before a game in which your son was playing against the Browns?
That was a big day. To go back and, to be honest, I think I was more comfortable when I had the pads and the helmet on than I was standing out there giving a form of a speech, but it was a big night, and they treated me very well, and I feel very much at home there.
We're spending a few minutes with Clay Matthews Jr., as people sometimes get it wrong, but you're the second Clay Matthews in your family, but the first one now to be a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, which was just announced over the weekend. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. So your daughter tells me it was a message that was left by David Baker of the Hall of Fame. What was it like for you to hear that message on your home phone?
Well, I came in and heard that, and I think my my temperature just started rising. And, you know, I've said this to several folks. I was one of those kids who was a big fan of the NFL. I was one of those kids who collected those little football helmets, the little plastic ones. And, you know, really, if you looked at me at the beginning of high school, say my freshman year, you never could have predicted that I would be a guy who would eventually make it to the NFL. I think I weighed all of 132 pounds, you know, and I was starting to lift weights and came home, and my mom was there. And now my mom weighed about 107 pounds, but she was wiry, and she was the women's champion golfer at the club. She could outdrive my dad. So wow. She challenged me to an arm wrestling deal. And I said, Mom, no, I might hurt you. She beat me. She beat me my freshman year in high school. And I walked, I remember it was at the kitchen table, and I just left and was, I don't know if I was disappointed. I think I was shocked. But I think I got some wiry strength from her. So I'll take that.
So then how did you turn that into a nearly 20-year career as a linebacker in the NFL from that humiliation, Clay?
Well, as it turned out, I was a late bloomer. And over the next 3 years, I got a little bigger and a little faster, a lot bigger and a lot faster. And then, I liked playing football. It's, people will ask me, well, why'd you play? How'd you play 19 years? And football's—it's a very hard game. You're usually hurt, I would say, 90% of the time. Mm. You know, your first couple years, you're just so excited about it and you love it, you know. And then it starts to catch up with you. But it never seemed to catch up to me. I mean, physically it did, but I always liked going out there, and I always got excited about it. And it never lost that excitement. Was able to play till I was 40, yeah.
So then when you think about quarterbacks like Drew Brees and Tom Brady and even Ryan Fitzpatrick, Aaron Rodgers, I mean, either in their 40s or late 30s, is it impressive to you, or you think, come on, these guys never get hit? They're not hitting anyone.
Well, I will say it's impressive, but they don't get hit that much. They do, though. But certainly their achievements are fantastic. And all I know is I can say on the last play that I played on my last game in the last year, I got a sack on the last play. You know, go out on top.
Did you know that was going to be your last game?
I kind of figured it. I had just finished my 19th year, or I was getting ready to finish, and the kids were getting old. We were still going back and forth because when I started in the NFL, you went home. You would leave the town where you had gone to play, and most people would either go back to school or they would get some sort of temporary job. And I had done that. Gosh, you know, by the time it behooves somebody to stay in town all the time, you know, I was getting old, and I go, well, I only have about one more year, and that kept going on and on and on.
Did you hold other jobs then while you were playing in the league?
I did initially, yes, and then I went back to school. I went back and got my MBA, although I'm still a class short. I went for 3 years, and then we made the playoffs, and I couldn't finish it. It took me like 4 or 5 years to where I could get back to go to school. And at that point, I don't know, I got preoccupied with something else.
Can you imagine playing in 2020 when so many of these guys are having to separate from their families or at least stay safe in the midst of a pandemic? Could you imagine doing that?
Well, you'd be able to focus on the game, that's for sure. I think the hardest part would be playing in a stadium with either no or few fans.
Right.
And that really, I believe, is what makes, you know, football such a game that I'm playing linebacker in a guard pull, so here comes a 320-pound man running as fast as he can who's about to hit me. And common sense would say, don't hit him. But your job was to set the edge, say. And you'd go in there and you'd have to take him on full speed. And to a degree, the accountability in front of all the fans is what allowed you to do that. And I couldn't imagine playing without that electricity that comes from the fans week in and week out.
Yeah, it's such a different atmosphere, and you can hear everything, absolutely everything. Having gone to a regular season game this season, I know they're pumping in the crowd noise, but when the play is actually going on, you can hear the communication with these guys on the line and in the trenches. It's a completely different experience. Some stadiums with, say, almost 7,000 fans, like the Bills over the weekend as they hosted their first playoff game since 95, and Jennifer sent me a text that said, ask him about the interception he had of Jim Kelly in the 89 AFC divisional playoff game. So, that's the last time the Bills were really good was the late 80s and the 90s, and now look at them into the next round of the playoffs. But do you remember that moment?
I do. The Bills were very good, and they were driving down for what would be the winning score, and they had been throwing to the back a lot, and the call came in, and it was man-to-man, and there was no underneath help. So usually when a running back runs a pattern, it's going to be underneath. So I knew I had no help, and he ran a route, and I'm not saying I guessed, but he could only go one of two ways, and I went one way, and he went that way also. And, you know, I was able to get it.
Clay Matthews is now a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame and had four times been a semifinalist, but gets to that final group of 15 along with the likes of, say, Peyton Manning and Charles Woodson, Jared Allen, some others in there. And he spent most of his career in Cleveland and finished up with the Atlanta Falcons and now joining us here on CBS Sports Radio. What's the major difference between linebacker then and linebacker now, or defense then and defense now in the NFL?
You know, you still, fortunately for me or unfortunately, when I came into the league, I was a fourth down or excuse me, third down dime linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the league evolved a little bit, I became a 3-4 outside linebacker. And then I remember in my 12th year, I went and I said, hey, can I rush the passer? So they let me rush the passer. And, you know, over 19 years, I did, you know, about every skill there was. So I'd like to think, you know, I can watch a game and say, well, that skill requires this or that. And it, the players are certainly better prepared and better conditioned now. You know, it they train year round and they're fast and big and you know, they play well.
Mm. What about these rules that protect quarterbacks? What do you think?
That the quarterbacks, I can see it. You know, the thing I always liked about football was, you know, there were several different ways to win. One was, you know, you just prepared real well, or you conditioned real well, you know, or you coached them up real well. But and all the other sports have this too. But the one thing that football had was a team that wasn't as talented as another team. If they came out and out hit the other team, they could win a game.
Mm-hmm.
Where and to a degree, I like that because it's, you know, it it's kind of the way that a scrappy human being can you know, make something happen for himself by getting out there and working his rear off. And I always liked that. And they, you know, as the players have gotten so much faster and so much bigger, the collisions are getting pretty severe now. So I can see some of the changes that have been made.
Was it more nerve-wracking to watch your sons play when you have family members in the NFL to watch them and support them? Is that tougher than being out there yourself?
You're absolutely right. It when you're sitting up there watching them, it I remember I was just nervous the whole game and didn't talk a lot. I didn't cheer a lot. I just watched. And it, you know, you would see someone fall by their legs and you'd unconsciously lift your own leg as if, you know, he wouldn't get hurt that way. But it, you know, the stress of watching them play, especially as they played more and more, became more and more severe.
Your daughter's kind of taken up this campaign of trying to get you into Canton, into the Hall of Fame. That's really neat that she's decided this is something that it really matters to her.
She's a special girl, and I know dads say that about their daughters, but she really is. And, you know, when she first started this, I was I didn't know where she was going to go. And then the amount of people that she's talked to and who have been willing to offer up a commentary on my play is just amazing. And it's, you know, you have I have four sons and one daughter, and the one daughter is still the one going in football the hardest. So it's amazing.
Oh, that's great. Could you imagine being there on that stage in Canton?
You know, I'm humbled by it. I'm overwhelmed. I think I mentioned it earlier, but I was kind of a big fan when I was a little kid of the NFL. In fact, when I first went back to Cleveland, you know, the Pro Football Hall of Fame is in Canton, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
Down the turnpike from Cleveland. And I remember one of the first things I did, they actually gave us a free pass to the Hall of Fame. And on Tuesday, our day off, I took my newlywed wife and we went down to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So I was a fan of the NFL long before I became a participant in it.
I understand that it is your 42nd wedding anniversary on Wednesday. That's really amazing. Congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's, I got some, I got some really special family members. I'm very blessed.
And when you retired, Jennifer says you didn't slow down much, that you continued to do all kinds of other things, like play basketball and go snowboarding and mountain biking. And
well, you got to keep moving or your body. I think an ex-football player's body is like a rusty gate. If you don't use it, it's going to lock up. So I try to keep moving.
Oh, well, this is really cool. It's great to talk to you. And I know that Cleveland fans, every time we bring it up or every time Jennifer tweets about it, they go flooding the website and vote.
The people back there, you know, it's just really special. In fact, I have a middle son who lives in Cleveland. And, you know, so he can keep me informed of all the inside scoop with the Browns. So I've really enjoyed it.
That's awesome. Well, Happy New Year to you. And I know that at some point the announcement will come out. But, of course, there's a lot of people rooting for you. Clay Matthews Jr. is now a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So, Clay, thank you so much for a couple of minutes. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you, Amy. I enjoyed it.
That's cool, huh? Really cool. Third time I've listened to the conversation, and I'm still smiling over it. I love his descriptions of his wonder at the NFL and how much he was a fan of the league long before he ever had dreams and aspirations of playing, and how he was the late bloomer, and talk about his family and Wednesday being his 42nd wedding anniversary. So I feel like I have some inside scoop because of my friendship with his daughter, and she's just raved about her dad, how humble he is and how he really was embarrassed by her campaign initially to try to get him into the Hall of Fame. But if you look at the numbers and you see the testimonials, she's managed to collect testimonials from the likes of Jim Kelly, who he intercepted in that 1989 AFC Divisional Championship. And Jim Kelly is saying Clay Matthews deserves to be enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Nick Saban talking about coaching Clay Matthews. Warren Moon. She also told me, Jennifer told me, that she was waiting on a call from John Elway. We recently got a testimonial from Boomer Esiason, and I say we because I helped connect her and Boomer. And it's phenomenal, the words, Bill Cowher and his own brother, Bruce Matthews, phenomenal the words that these Hall of Famers have for Clay, and how did he get overlooked? And maybe it's because he played in the era that he did. And I don't believe that should be a deterrent, even though there are going to be guys who go in on the first ballot this year, like a Peyton Manning, like a Charles Woodson. And so I would love for you to avail yourself of the numbers and how they compare with some of the other linebackers who are already into the Hall of Fame. And the announcement will come out sometime in the next couple weeks. And right now the selection process is underway. And so we're excited. I feel like I've been recruited to be part of the Clay Matthews team, but awesome to be able to have him on the show too. And I don't know that we've ever had an interview outside of Super Bowl week with a Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist who is still waiting for the call. So I appreciate his time and his willingness to share his stories with us. On Twitter, After Hours CBS, also on our Facebook page. And by the way, we will post the link to that conversation if you want to share it. It's always a part of our podcast, After Hours, AmyLawrence.com.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. It's a Touchdown Tuesday on After Hours.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon. Touchdown!
One man to beat ten. He's gone!
They throw in the end zone. Caught! Touchdown!
Made a guy miss. He's inside the five. He's to the 3-2-1.
Touchdown! Southern Salting into the end zone. Touchdown!
To cast your vote for the TD of the week, head to @AfterHoursCBS on Twitter or give us a call at 855-212-4227. The Baltimore Ravens.
Steps up, pocket collapsing, he escapes. He's to the 40-yard line, 35-30, Lamar Jackson to the 20, leg race, 10-5. And he's pushed out of bounds at the one-yard line. No! Signal is touchdown! Lamar Jackson on 3rd and 9. He takes it to the house. And the Ravens an extra point away from tying it up.
The Buffalo Bills.
It is Zach Moss in the backfield with Josh Allen, the snap. And he keeps it himself on the quarterback option, runs right side, he is in. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills get the lead back again. They go 96 yards and take the lead.
The Cleveland Browns.
James Conner in the backfield on the right side of Big Ben. Motion by the tight end McDonald down the line left to right. And the snap goes high over the head of Big Ben. All the way back to the 2, to the 1. And the Browns have it in the end zone. And they dive on the ball and recover it for a touchdown. Carl Joseph's got it in the end zone. A touchdown.
Not a bad start.
6-0 Browns.
Alabama. Mack straight drop. Mack looks long. Mack finds Devontae behind the defense. He is in for a touchdown. Thank you, Mr. Heisman. Thank you, Mr. O'Brien, and Unitas Award winner. What a combination. 44 yards, touchdown, Alabama.
We mixed it up just a little bit with your candidates for TD of the week with the crowning of a national champ and the historical performance from one Devontae Smith. We included his third touchdown of the first half against Ohio State on Monday night. The Heisman Trophy winner, who is likely to be a top three pick in the NFL draft. Eli Gold with the call on the Crimson Tide Radio Network from Learfield Sports. The Browns Radio Network, Jim Donovan, and what a way to start the game. There were a lot of different highlights we could have chosen, but that touchdown by Carl Joseph, the fumble recovery in the end zone on the first snap of the game, it took all of 14 seconds. That's the one we have put into the poll for this week. The Buffalo Bills had an incredible performance from Josh Allen. They needed all of his aggressiveness and his moxie to be able to hold off the Colts in their first playoff win since 1995. John Murphy on the Bills radio network. And at the very top, the Ravens, a 48-yard touchdown run from Lamar Jackson, or the Flash. That's what he looked like to me. Jerry Sandusky with the call. So you can vote on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We'll put those polls up very quickly. And also while you're there, make sure you send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Clay Matthews Jr. We'll bring back a portion of that later in the show for our early morning Eastern time zone, East Coast audience, including those of you who are in Cleveland. If you didn't hear it, you want to share it. It's always on our podcast. Now, coming up next, it was a unique and quirky one-year anniversary in the NFL. It's hard to believe where we were a year ago, right? And we've also got a very special honor for one Devontae Adams, but I am far more entertained by his recent tweet about another Devontae. So we'll mix it all up here straight ahead. Vote for TD of the week and send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. We might need to change the name.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
I think we've had a very good year. You know, obviously, we scored more points than any team in history. You know, we've had some pretty good offenses and some pretty good firepower. You know, and so that's a good, it's a good accomplishment. You know, Russ has 40 touchdowns. You know, and that's amazing.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of one Pete Carroll, who is proud of what his offense accomplished this year, but there is the other shoe that dropped. Unfortunately, late in the season for the Seahawks, the offense just didn't crank up the way that it had earlier in the year and ultimately ran into a buzzsaw in the Rams defense in the game that was played as part of the supersized wild card weekend. Man, it feels like forever ago, and yet it's just been a couple of days. We crammed in so much football Saturday, Sunday, and Monday that to think back to Saturday afternoon and the Rams and the Seahawks in an NFC West rematch. Whew, I got to really dig down deep into the coffers It wasn't a great offensive game for either team. Really, the only guy who had a breakout performance was Cam Akers, the rookie running back for the Los Angeles Rams, 131 yards and a touchdown. It was the Rams defense that had a field day. 5 sacks, 10 quarterback hits, holding the Seahawks to just 2 of 14 on third down. The pick six by Darius Williams off Russell Wilson. And the fierce aggressiveness. Now, Aaron Donald is good to go for this coming weekend against the Green Bay Packers. You may remember he left the game in the fourth quarter with a rib injury. But according to Sean McVay, the Terminator is ready to play come the game against the Packers on Saturday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. The Brian Schottenheimer offense coordinator run is done in Seattle as he's finished as the OC there after 3 years. So that position is open. And how often has a coordinator from Seattle gone on to serve as a head coach somewhere else? Dan Quinn being another example, took the job in Atlanta, took the job in Atlanta and now is in Dallas as a defensive coordinator again. And so with the productiveness of Seattle as a franchise and the fact that they are generally part of the playoffs, even if it's not an NFC West title, the way that Pete Carroll gets the best out of the guys that he has, it's a well-oiled machine there, and they really did focus on putting together an atmosphere where guys could pay attention to football and could thrive in this environment and yet would still be safe. And they did it masterfully well. But unfortunately, the offense really fizzled out at the end. So Russell Wilson, he's not going to get any MVP votes this season either. That run will continue even as he's finished up his 9th year in the NFL. Are you wondering about the ratings from Supersized Wildcard Weekend? Because I definitely was. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, our hump show. We're about an hour away from Ask Amy Anything. So you've got some time left to get creative and send your questions to our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or our Facebook page. Did we put up the poll for TD of the Week, Producer Dave? Oh, yes, we did. Huh, because I don't see it. Okay, my fault. I will find it. There it is. Oh, okay. Somehow I missed it. That is my faux pas. I can't claim to be a social media maven or a social media maverick. Okay, I'll retweet it here. It's on our show Twitter or on our Facebook page. And so you can choose TD of the week. And while you're on either one of our sites, of course, you can send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. I wanted to wait until all the numbers were in from the various streaming outlets and online outlets, plus the combination of Nickelodeon with CBS for the Bears and the Saints game. So I didn't want to get the quick overnight numbers on Monday from the games that we saw this weekend. But now that all the numbers have been compiled, I'm pretty surprised at the ratings, the viewership for the Supersized Wildcard Weekend. And I don't know if it's because of extra saturation. I don't know if it's because This is a fact, but I don't know if this applied to this weekend. Maybe it's a combination of things. But the fact that so many people have changed their viewing habits, but it's still the NFL playoffs. And I'm kind of surprised. I thought the matchups were really good, and we had some great storylines with teams who hadn't been into the postseason for quite a while. Maybe it was that there was too much football and people were spread really thin. But according to the viewership numbers from Nielsen, which is the company that compiles all of the viewership numbers, the 6 postseason games that we had over the weekend in the NFL were down 22% compared to last year's 4-game schedule over Wild Card Weekend. Now, if you're wondering about the NFL as a whole during the regular season, it was only a 7% decline in ratings. All right. So the reason I say only is because every other sport has experienced significant drops in viewership, double figure points. And we've talked about them over the course of the last 10 months. A lot of it being because sports were out of their natural habitats. They were out of season. They were in bubbles. They didn't have fans. So the NFL's modest 7% decline in viewership during the regular season, I actually thought was pretty good. But then you come to what is supposed to be this marquee weekend, and the numbers are off 22%. So more games, but 22% fewer viewers, fewer eyeballs. You may be surprised that the most popular game of the weekend was Saints and Bears. It was actually a low-scoring game. The final was 21-9, and it was only 21-9 because Jimmy Graham caught a touchdown pass on the very last play of the game. Otherwise, it was essentially 21-3. Maybe it's because of the time slot, the fact that it was in that late afternoon Eastern time, Sunday time slot.
Stop, Bears.
Or it was the first afternoon game on the West Coast, and that's when people are used to watching football. But the scoring was way down. Yes, Drew Brees, but come on the Chicago Bears, what big superstar are you turning in to watch?
The Bears.
Khalil Mack? I mean, if you're a huge fan, you know who he is, but generally it's not a defensive player that draws eyeballs, especially casual fans, to the tube. So yeah, that game averaged just under 29 million viewers. You combine it with the Nickelodeon numbers. So that was the game that was on Nickelodeon. On CBS, Saints and Bears had 28.6 million viewers. You throw in the 2.06 million viewers on Nickelodeon, and that game was over 30 million. Okay, so that is your highest rated, most popular game of Supersized Wildcard Weekend. Saints and Bears. On two different channels, just over 30 million viewers.
Ooh, oh.
But how about this? If you compare it to the game that was in that same time slot a year ago, Seahawks and Eagles, down almost 30%. The ratings were off almost 30% from the same time slot a year ago with Seahawks and Eagles. Producer Dave, does that surprise you? I mean, I get there's Drew Brees, and so that would be a reason why people would tune into this game, plus the Sunday afternoon time slot, but off 29% from Seahawks and Eagles?
I think it surprises me more about the matchup that we're talking about this year. This was the game I was least interested in. I know that it could have been Drew Brees' last game in a Saints uniform, but I personally never thought they were going to lose to the Bears. So I watched, but it was the game I was least interested in. And
I think it's the time slot. People are used to watching football then.
Maybe it's just that there were so many games. As great as it was, maybe it's the oversaturation of, am I sitting through, is my family letting me, is my husband, wife, whoever's letting me sit through six games? And then you're telling me we're going to watch football on Monday night this week too? I mean, it's a lot.
So a year ago, Seattle barely beat Philly. It was another low-scoring game. It was 17-9, so it was a one-score affair. That one averaged better than 35 million viewers. So this one, between Nickelodeon and CBS, was over 30 million, but still way off. All right, so moving forward, you had, this is a side note. The Saints were the second largest national TV audience during the regular season, so maybe that explains. I really do think it's a lot to do with Drew Brees. And Kansas City wasn't playing this weekend, but they were the number one draw during the regular season. Saturday's tripleheader had one game. That averaged, I would say, relatively well. That was kind of in the proper range, or the range you would expect. 24 million viewers for Rams Seahawks. Again, the middle game. So two NFC contests, Rams Seahawks, Bears Saints. Those are the ones that did the best in those respective time slots. And get this, Rams Seahawks was actually the third highest rated NFL broadcast of the season so far. What? That's crazy, right? Let's see. I'll keep going with Saturday. Colts and Bills, 20 million viewers. Tampa, Washington, 21.5. So the Colts and Bills, which I kind of felt like was going to be a really attractive game. Phillip Rivers, the Bills, all their storylines, Josh Allen. Maybe it was the fact that it was early on a Saturday afternoon. And in fact, on the West Coast, it was starting in the morning. Maybe that's why. But only 20 million viewers. And then the night game, which a lot of people don't sit around and watch TV on Saturday nights, though more during a pandemic, I guess. But the night game, Tampa, Washington, which featured Tom Brady, 21.5 million viewers. Wow. The Bills and Colts, the least watched wild card game on record. I mean, that's history. We're not just talking about compared to last year. The least watched wild card game on record. Saturday night, the lowest rated primetime playoff game that the NFL has ever had. How about that? I mean, if you're the NFL, aren't you considering, maybe reconsidering this format if the people are not tuning in? Now, the game on Sunday night between the Steelers and the Browns was 26 million viewers, but that includes Telemundo. Okay, so it wasn't just the viewers that were tuning in on Sunday night on NBC. It also included Telemundo and the streaming. Okay, so you had 26 million people who watched it, but not all on network TV, which is where the majority of the ad revenue comes from. On TV, it wasn't even 25 million viewers. So on NBC in that window. And it was actually better than Baltimore and Tennessee by a good 1.5 million. It's stunning to me. I'm not telling you that I didn't see some drop-off coming, because that's been the pattern with NBA, NHL playoffs, even baseball and the World Series. We've seen some of the lowest ratings on record for these championship rounds. But after the NFL only dropped off 7% over the course of the regular season, I would never have expected that the ratings for this wildcard weekend with two extra games would be down 22%. And some of the lowest wildcard games ever rated. That's stunning.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.